Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Tuesday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. Andy, some leftover trade deadline stuff about what the Lakers did and didn't do that looks forward to potential issues over the summer. We'll get into all that and maybe a little bit about Austin Reeves, LA's bright spot this season, or at least one of them. We'll talk about all of that next.
You are Locked On Lakers. Your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
I want to thank everybody for making Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day, Monday through Friday. We get this thing up before you bright and early as we can, no matter where you get your podcasts, how you get your podcasts. We have fresh Lakers content for you absolutely free, never behind a paywall. We're not like those kinds of people. Make a Locked On podcast your second listen of every day if you can, but only after making us your first. Also want to let you know that today's Locked On episode is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline, where the game starts. So we'll try to get to Austin Reeves, who was set before the media today on Monday after the Lakers practice. Frank Vogel talked a little bit based on, Andy, a question that you asked him about roles and how guys embrace them and whether they do. That obviously brings to mind Russell Westbrook and a couple other guys on the team. But I kind of want to start with some things that we didn't get to with the trade deadline last week, as a sense of normalcy hopefully kind of envelops the Lakers a little bit. It would be nice if they win, because there were a few things last week and certainly now into this week that point to a little distress in the system if things continue not to go well. Dave McMenamin at ESPN, for example, noted that Rob Pelinka, who said he was fully in alignment with Anthony Davis and LeBron James, that doing nothing at the trade deadline, they were on board with it. They knew what was going on and everybody signed off on it. Dave reported that that might not be true, in the sense that LeBron James and Anthony Davis may not have been consulted and may not have signed off on anything.
Yeah, Dave said on one of the ESPN shows, quote, "I am told from a source familiar with LeBron and Anthony's thinking that that quote is, quote, totally false. There was no conversation between Rob Pelinka, LeBron and Anthony Davis on Thursday. There was no go-ahead of an okay to have an inaction at the deadline. So that's where things stand right now. That tells me there is not just problems with what you're seeing on the court with the Lakers losing 6 out of 8 at the time of Dave doing this show, but there's, it may have actually gone up since then.
Who knows?
I think it's now 7 of 9.
Could be 7 of 9.
But there's problems off the court between an alignment, as Pelinka termed it, and his leaders on the court. And what's interesting about that, Brian, is there can be some devil in the details with this stuff. Like
how people are defining consultation and signing off.
And all the when. Like, I don't think anybody, including Rob Pelinka, went into the deadline thinking largely about inaction as a goal. Like, there were way too many reports about, you know, Pelinka working the phones and too many rumors. Like, maybe they didn't talk that specific day, like an hour or two before the deadline ended, or even closer than that. So I don't know when the last conversation they had, which could be the devil in the details. It could also be Pelinka is lying his ass off about how LeBron and AD feel about this. And
or that LeBron and AD are trying to save face and be like, hey, it wasn't us who said, you know, we're cool with standing pat the way we are. Like, no, we wanted to make this thing better and trade John Wall or whatever it might be.
Yeah, it may be somewhere in the middle where it was like, look, we are okay with it. Like, we're not angry at you, Rob, but we're not thrilled with it either. Don't make it sound like we're happier than we are. Therefore, we have somebody from our camp tell this stuff to Dave. And look, damage control, or controlling the narrative, as our man Kendall Roy would say, that's part of the job. You know, control the narrative. Maybe Pelinka should tread lightly about, you know, lying too much, because LeBron and AD may not appreciate being dragged into this.
Or maybe, you know, just saying anything, to be perfectly honest.
Well, he had to say something, because, you know, people are going to be looking for reassurances.
Well, can I, let me just jump in here for a second, because sure. I think what we're talking about here fundamentally gets to one of the major problems that they have, is everybody is in CYA mode. You know, cover your ass. And so, you know, Rob Pelinka knows that he's being criticized for the Russell Westbrook deal, for the Russell Westbrook trade. And I think prefers that people understand, hey, this wasn't all me, you know, like I didn't have a meeting at LeBron's house and take Russ up on our elevator and all that other stuff. And
no, I think he was the only guy not invited.
Right. You know, it's like, I didn't do that. You know, it wasn't my idea to even bring the guy here in the first place. You know, I'm in constant contact and consultation with my stars. And this is something that they wanted to do. Meanwhile, I think the other half of that equation wants to make it clear that, hey, we're not the GM of the team. Like we, you know, we bring things to people, we bring opportunities, but ultimately he's got to make that call and make that deal. And if things don't go the way we expect, and spoiler alert, they haven't, you know, that's the GM. Like, you know, we're not cool with what's going on here. And
I'm just a kid from Akron.
Right. And we're in Chicago, right?
Yeah.
Know where AD's from?
Yeah, he is.
And so that to me is what's sort of distressing about where this is all sort of going. There are other things that, you know, other little reports, and John Hollinger wrote something for The Athletic that questions a little bit about where Pelinka is. And, you know, there's a report that Magic Johnson was being consulted again by Jeannie Buss.
Jesus. It
makes you wonder where her mind is and all this stuff. Like, the Lakers finishing strong with a competent, you know, final 20 whatever games after the All-Star break, and even if they lose in the first round, get through the play-in and take the Warriors or the Suns to 6 or 7 games, takes at least some of this away. But, you know, the feel-good moments of Saturday and getting past the trade deadline, and I say all this relative, it's all relative. There are still storm clouds. There are many storm clouds on the horizon right now. And, you know, that report for me just conjures up the problems that you have with superstar culture and the rumors and all the talk about Rob Pelinka's perception around, not even so much around with fellow GMs, but how he's seen with other players and whether or not players find him trustworthy.
Yeah. It's funny when you mention superstar culture, like it's obviously preferable that Pelinka, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Jeannie, the Rambi, like whoever else in this building truly matters, that they're all on the same page. Like that is the best case scenario. But the truth is, on every occasion, everyone isn't always going to be on the same page. And that's ultimately okay. Like LeBron and AD, contrary to popular belief and how it sometimes seems, and maybe functionally at times it is, they're not actually the ones who are supposed to be in charge. And mm-hmm. The two of them should always, and I emphasize this, always have a voice in important matters. But they should not always get an automatic vote. And they are not entitled to an automatic vote. Like in reading about this stuff from Dave and thinking about this, Brian, it reminded me of years ago when the Lakers were looking to replace Phil Jackson. And Kobe went on record as wanting Brian Shaw to be that replacement. And you and I, for what it's worth at the time, we were covering the team, both were on record saying, we think it should be Brian Shaw as well. This was a team built to win now. Brian Shaw would have been an easy transition. He was somebody who had a great relationship with Kobe, all that stuff. They ended up replacing him with Mike Brown. And Kobe, obviously, should always have had a voice in this sort of decision. He was Kobe Bryant. He absolutely earned that. And also, practically speaking, you don't want to leave him out. Kobe wasn't necessarily entitled to a vote, though. The problem they had was Kobe ended up finding this out the way all of us did through SportsCenter. Like, he had been in the dark that Mike Brown was going to be the replacement. And that obviously was a massive mistake by Jim Buss and presumably Mitch Kupchak as well. Like, that's the sort of thing where in superstar culture or just common sense, you got to make sure these guys are in the loop. But again, even if you go against Kobe's wishes there or LeBron and Anthony Davis last week, you need to make sure the communication is always present, even if they aren't hearing the things they want to hear.
Yeah, and look, I think the die was sort of cast on the West potential Westbrook stuff the minute it became clear the Lakers were not going to add that 2027 first round pick, that meant there would be no Russell Westbrook trade this year. And, you know, I think most observers of this, despite how awkward it's been, would say you can't freak out and make a bad trade just because it's available to you. Now, I put out the point, absolutely believe it's true that it's not a bad trade if it's the only time you think you'll be able to do it. But, you know, that clearly was not going to be something that happened at this trade deadline. And hopefully the performance that Westbrook gave on Saturday, the comfort level that he seemed to have, the kind of regained energy that he seemed to have will carry through after the, you know, Wednesday and then after the All-Star break. But they still got to figure out what to do with that thing. And we're going to get to a place where the communication between the two stars, Anthony Davis and Rob Pelinka, and LeBron James, along with Rob Pelinka, are going to become incredibly important. And, you hope that this isn't the first sign of something that becomes more problematic over the summer. A couple more things. Let's get to a couple other things that have popped up in terms of post-deadline housekeeping that have been reported, including some stuff from John Hollinger. I want to mention, too, the Lakers are going to have another practice on Tuesday, Andy. Two in a row, which is a very unusual thing these days in the NBA. We'll do all that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Bet Online. Football may be over for the season. Congratulations again to the Rams, but basketball still in full swing, both for the pros and college. And for all the latest odds, totals, player performance props to where the next fired coach is going to land, betonline.net is the number one spot for all your sports betting needs. BetOnline remains the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. And it's not just basketball. BetOnline.net is your source for hockey, boxing, UFC odds, right down to the Olympic coverage and information. Head to the website today. Use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. BetOnline, where the games start.
So it's critically important that your star players trust their general manager. And, you know, this, you know, we mentioned sort of the rumors that that have gone around really for a few years now that Rob Pelinka is not particularly well-liked by other GMs. I don't think that's necessarily that important as long as they think that GM is a straight dealer. I still think that's true. It's better probably to get along with your colleagues, but I don't think it's essential. It is, however, really critical to make sure the players don't think that you are, what is the word, duplicitous?
You're asking me? You've got a better vocabulary than me, Brian.
It's either that or that is some sort of dinosaur.
No. Sure. I think you have the correct word. I'm not going to swear
sure
that
I'm
you're
saying it right.
Right. Yeah. And again, I'm the lesser source between
I'll
us.
Ask my daughter, who knows all the names of the dinosaurs, if duplicitous is actually a dinosaur. But either way, you don't want them to think you're two-faced.
Duplicious? Maybe.
There's a delicious.
I don't know.
I should have just said a snake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Snake in the grass. I don't know enough about what's going on here to know that. I just know that that kind of reporting, like this guy says this and then the other camp responds was no, we didn't. It is always bad when everybody gets into CYA mode. Nothing good comes of that.
For what it's worth, we can move on. I used to hear a lot more about GMs around the league not wanting to work with Rob or not trusting Rob mm-hmm. than I do now. And
true.
I used to hear it a lot
yes.
from a yeah. lot of people that I trusted
I wonder,
it was prevalent.
And I wonder, though, how much a lot of the chatter and the rumor mills and all that stuff just have to do with there are fewer people in NBA buildings now.
Well,
you were around, but like, you're right.
Well, it also, look,
I agree. It is not something that you hear nearly as much as you used to.
And here's the thing too. It also may be they trust Rob more or less the same, but the organization is easier to work with than it was then because yep. Magic's not in the building. Because as we saw during the attempts to acquire Anthony Davis at the deadline that fell apart, Magic was not helpful.
No, Jeannie should stop asking him questions. Apparently, he was, she went. The report is from that Bill Orem. From Bill Orem is that Jeannie went back and found, you know, in
around December.
Magic reiterated they've been injured. Don't freak out, whatever, and calmed Jeannie down. But good God, Jeannie Buss. I mean, the guy literally quit his job without telling you and left the organization in a horrendously bad place. You know, you want to still have him over Thanksgiving? Fine. But don't go to him for business purposes.
I mean, this is truly, I wish I knew how to quit you. Like, I mean, really, God truly. Come on. But Jeannie.
This is related because
he wasn't even that good at his job to begin with. Why are you going in for evaluations?
Not magic related, but for the people who still work in the organization. And again, I would like to remind everybody that there is none of the other 29 teams in the league would have Kurt Rambis in the kind of role that he is in with the Lakers. Linda Rambis maybe on the business side. I don't know. But no. Kurt Rambis wouldn't be allowed anywhere near basketball making decisions for the other 29 teams.
I mean, I don't know about that. Because, I mean, he's been around. He's a lifer. There are other guys like him in organizations.
What was he doing before the Lakers brought him back, Andy?
No. I don't think it's impossible that he could have had that type of job somewhere. I don't. Where I totally agree with you is he would not have been coveted or it wouldn't have been considered mandatory to put him in there. That's the difference.
Maybe. I don't think anybody... he's really apparently quite high level these days.
Yes, he is.
The other part of this, though, it gets into sort of the competence of Rob Pelinka, because John Hollinger at The Athletic in his trade deadline wrap-up...
Former exec, by the way, if people are not aware. He was with the Grizzlies surprise. Front office.
And I like John, and we know John, and yeah. I like John a lot. And I think he's an excellent basketball writer and all these other things. Even he sort of admits in his story, like, these are things that he's not first person connected to. He is no longer an NBA executive. People do not, he doesn't always have the inside track on every trade that happens or doesn't happen. He talked about, though, his surprise that the Lakers were unable to, send out guys like DeAndre Jordan and Kent Bazemore, pay teams to take them off of their hands to open roster spots for, buyout guys or more useful players, which would be basically anyone they'd be willing to play, and save themselves significant amounts of money in luxury tax. You know, we talked about it on Monday's show, Andy, that part of their hesitation to do that might be that they just don't think they're going to get anyone. One part of it. There's also the possibility that they tried to make those offers to other teams and they said no. Or there's door number three, which is they just didn't do it. I'm a little bit suspicious of that one because there have been rumors that the Lakers and reports that the Lakers have been trying to offload those dudes for weeks.
Yeah, me too.
But it does get into the larger question of how good do you think Rob Pelinka is at his job? Because the work that he's going to have to do this summer to unwind the Westbrook deal, if that's the move that they make, or build a better roster around these three guys, if that's the path that they choose, is going to be incredibly difficult. And if ever there was a time when Rob Pelinka needed to be real good at his job, it's this summer. And these types of questions, these types of reports, these things with that McMenamin reported, this stuff that Hollinger is talking about, it just brings into a little bit more focus about how good Rob Pelinka may or may not be at his job.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this a lot, Brian. I think this is still very much an open question with Pelinka because the results, but also the process, and at least my impression of the process, but I think in a lot of ways yours as well, I think has been all over the place. And obviously, Rob Pelinka was the steward of a championship team, and he has to get credit for that. Like, that is not easy to do under any circumstances. That being said, though, a lot of that kind of worked itself out for Rob.
You are correct.
In the sense that LeBron basically chose the Lakers, and it was pretty much a meeting with Magic. Don't crap the bed at LeBron's house. And you basically,
I'm landing the plane
this.
Here at this time. Please make sure there's nothing on the runway.
Right. It is a And by the way, the runway's massive.
Like, it's big runway.
Really,
it's a big plane. Really big. just clear the stuff off the runway.
The Anthony Davis deal was, I don't mean this like Pelinka got used or anything like that. You have to give a lot to get a player like Anthony Davis. Neither one of us was critical at the time or even now of the assets they surrendered.
Absolutely. You do that 100 times out of 100.
A lot of that was sort of just dictated by circumstance and both sides really in a position where it had to happen. Danny Green, the only reason they were able to get him is he happened to be waiting out Kawhi's decision. Right. Just like, by the way, the Lakers were, and there is at least some reason to believe that the Lakers may have been, frankly, snowed in that process of wait and use.
And ultimately, though, the...
Because Kawhi never seemed like somebody that really would have wanted to
be right. And, you know, but even, and even if they were, that's not great. If they weren't, you know, it's still like, you know, even if you think you're being, might be being played a little bit, if you think there's a little bit of a chance that Kawhi Leonard comes, I think I don't mind leaving the door open.
But then, you know, other guys were holdovers and things like that. Sure. Like, it wasn't a lot of construction is my point.
And to the effect of that trade, it's like you just keep offering stuff until David Griffin says yes. And, you know, I guess you draw the line somewhere. But, like, you know, you need another second rounder. Okay, fine. You need Josh Hart. Okay, fine. And, like, you just keep going until they say yes.
Which isn't criticism. It's just the truth.
No, and the next year, I agree. And this is the thing. It's like, I don't want to be all, like, revisionist history here. I didn't disagree with their general approach to building the roster last year. I know you had questions about Dennis Schroeder's role, but the presence of Dennis Schroeder and the reasons that they did what they did, I think made sense.
Yes.
And had guys, they were a good team before everybody got hurt.
And I don't think, Brian, really quick, I don't think they could have just rolled it over with that short of a turnaround after the bubble with the collective age of that group. I don't think they could have.
This year, we both raised our hand and said, okay, the foundational thing that you're doing here is real dangerous in the Westbrook trade.
But
could work. And then having done that, the people you went out and signed were fine. But, you know, it's you're taking a massive risk because of what you're limiting yourself to. And, you know, we both pointed out the potential problems in the roster of guys that they put together, and you have to hope that a certain amount of them stick. They've actually gotten lucky in that Austin Reeves, who was not somebody that they planned on using at all this year, has turned into a very useful player, and other stuff like that has happened. But a lot of the assumptions and the things that Pelinka did in terms of the players that they went out and got haven't worked at all. And the job that he's got this summer is going to be even harder. So we can leave this here. There's another question that I want to get to, and we'll probably do it tomorrow, that somebody asked us. Apparently Stephen A. Smith, about how the Lakers need to trade Anthony Davis this offseason. It's sort of one of those things, Andy, that you can kind of scoff at a little bit, but given all the things that we've talked about with AD and the relatively near end of LeBron James's career, it's something to consider. So we'll do that over the course of the week as the Lakers go into the All-Star game. But let's talk about roles next. Let's talk about Austin Reeves. Let's talk about Russell Westbrook. Cause I do think, when you talk about roles, those two guys are an interesting combination to think about there. We'll do all that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Built Bar. Okay. It's February now. You have given up on your New Year's resolutions because you decided January sucked, particularly the whole thing about fitness. Like, screw that, man. It is not fun. And you know what even feels worse? Eating healthy. Well, guess what, man? Don't give up because Built Bars are right there, and they're your answer. They're the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, maybe even better than a candy bar, and they allow it to not feel boring because guess
this
what?
Is all, well, this is 100% Built Bar.
Right.
You know, look at that. Built Bar.
Yeah.
Built Bar.
You know what else it is? 100% real chocolate because all those Built Bars were covered in 100% real chocolate. Most of them only contain 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, but 17 grams of protein, and that's the good stuff. So many flavors to choose from, coconut almond, peanut butter, raspberry, mint brownie, salted caramel, down the line, always new, exciting flavor combinations to choose from. So go to built.com, use the promo code LOCK15, get 15% off your first order. Again, promo code LOCK15, 15% off at built.com.
Hey, Andy, ask me which way the beach is.
Brian, which way is the beach?
That way.
Nice.
Yeah. Built Bar.
Stop by the gun show on the way.
That's right. Okay. So you asked Frank Vogel a very interesting question about roles and the roles that guys play on a team.
After Monday's practice.
After Monday's practice.
What I asked him was just you know, given guys like Russ, but also AD playing full-time center, mm-hmm. LeBron shifting to center, and guys doing different things. And there's been varying levels of frustration from different players during some of this process. And what I asked him was just basically, how important is it for a player to embrace, to enjoy their role, to embrace it? Because I think it's very difficult to succeed in a role if you're not on some level truly embracing it. Like, for example, I don't think Russell Westbrook has really been embracing a lot of the adjustments asked from him, even if at times he is technically doing the stuff. Like, he may be going out and sort of to the letter doing certain things that he's supposed to be doing, but I don't think he has really embraced a whole lot of it. And I think that has created some resistance for him in terms of truly buying in and truly flourishing to whatever degree he actually can in these different roles and, you know, different responsibilities. And Frank Vogel said that he thought it was actually pretty important, like that ultimately he wants guys to be happy in their roles, that he keeps tabs on them and checks in with them, you know, trying to see where they are, taking the temperature of it, and that it's pretty important ultimately for guys to be healthy. And I wasn't sure how he'd answer, because there's another school of thought where it's like, you know what? You don't need to be happy. You're not getting paid to be happy. You're paid to do a job. And ultimately, your job this particular season may be to do X. You don't like X, but it doesn't matter. And all of us at some point have had jobs that some of those details and responsibilities included things you didn't like. And you have to go out and do it anyway. So I wasn't exactly sure how Vogel would answer it, but I thought his response was instructive in terms of just how he's trying to approach this with anybody that may not like the role.
It's, to me, the answer to the question really spoke to context and to where guys are in their careers and sort of what they're asked to do. Like, you know, you talked about LeBron. LeBron, I think, loves this, you know, would certainly love the stability of having the same roster on the floor every day. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, obviously they feel like they could do a lot better were that the case. But he loves the idea of doing different stuff. He loves being the point guard who's also the center, who's also the power forward, who's also the small forward. Like he digs that kind of thing. Anthony Davis has had to, like you say, sort of be coaxed into this thing where, even though he's kind of been a center for a very long time, like, just, we're not allowed to call the thing what it is. And
it's like Fight Club.
Know, right. But the context of his career is he's at a place where, okay, if you want to be one of the five guys, one of the seven guys, when people talk about who are the best players in the NBA, who are the ultra elite guys who have won titles and can do everything, all, you know, and all this, then this is something that you need to do. You need to, you know, elevate and change your comfort zone for the benefit of the team at large, like Nick Cage says. So, you know, you get a guy like that. So then you get Austin Reeves, who, the context of Austin Reeves is, undrafted free agent lands on the Lakers. I'll do whatever the F you want me to do at any time. You want to carry luggage? I'll carry luggage. If you want me to, you know, get everybody water, I'll get water. Oh, you actually need me to play? Well, on the floor, it just turns out the thing that he's really good at is the stuff that's connecting players and making the things look good and all that. And, oh, by the way, as an undrafted free agent rookie, he's spending incredibly significant minutes on the floor with LeBron James, Anthony Davis, and the Los Angeles Lakers. That sounds like a pretty easy role to go play. Like, that's fun for everybody. And that leaves you Westbrook. And the context of Westbrook having to enjoy the role is the hardest one, because his is all about, you can't do what you used to do as quite as well, or you're just not as good at it as the guy we have here, LeBron James, to put the ball in his hands, because every possession we have where you're controlling it, LeBron isn't, is making the other team better. And so trying to enjoy that role and embrace it, in fairness to us, it's the hardest job of anybody out here.
Yeah. I mean, it helps in, you know, like you said, in Reeves's case, he was just happy to be doing anything at all. But the connection point to me, though, in all of this is, you know, we're coming off Austin Reeves in Golden State having an incredible game. Mm-hmm. Like, you could argue that Austin Reeves was, if nothing else, based on what you expect from him as a player, he was the best guy on the court for the Lakers. You know, in terms of filling your specific role, nobody was better than Reeves. And he was definitely one of the best players for the Lakers, regardless of how you define it. But that game, though, is also an example of why it matters that other guys buy into their roles and hopefully succeed, because Austin Reeves is a connective player. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, he is going to be at his best when everybody is performing their best as a team, and where he can fill in the gaps and do some of the little things that only matter if the big things are actually taking place. And for the most part, there will be exceptions, but for the most part, Austin Reeves' value as a player is going to be demonstrated best in games where other guys are playing well together, and there's actually something to connect for Reeves.
And he's also not going to be somebody that anybody really looks to if things go poorly. If Lakers lose four games in a row, whether Austin Reeves was great or not, nobody's going to say, you know why the Lakers are seven games under 500 now? Hillbilly bleeping Kobe. That's
no,
why.
It's nobody's Avery Bradley's job.
Right, exactly. Yeah, but if anything goes wrong, that's where Russell Westbrook and stuff. I there were probably people now, because I was sort of sympathetic to Russ on Monday's show. I'm sounding sympathetic to Russ now. That's not, but my point isn't that Russ deserves our pity. But I find the psychology of this fascinating, and I find the interaction between fan expectations and the human beings that are sort of at the other end of this stuff to be equally fascinating, because, you know, the what is right versus what is happening, what should happen in a perfect world, what fans think should happen, and what, you know, maybe should happen in a perfect world of professionalism, separates often the actual people that are in here. And I just think it's a fascinating thread. And when you asked about roles, it got me just thinking in that way of context and what it means to try to be happy in your role. It took Carmelo mm-hmm. Anthony falling out of the league to yeah. embrace this role. That
same with Dwight got. Howard.
Yes. And so, you know, we can point to those guys, and people have. I've seen commentators do it all the time. Like, why can't you be more like Dwight? Why can't you be more like Melo? Well, Melo wasn't Melo until he was out of the league. But anyway, we'll table the thing. We'll get you ready for Utah on Wednesday. We'll table that Anthony Davis question, because I do think it's really interesting, and not quite as hot takey and ridiculous as perhaps it might seem on its face. So we'll do all that over the course of the week. Get you ready for the All-Star game. Reminder, our Locked On Lakers on YouTube. Get us past 5,000 subscribers. We're so close. It'll make us feel really good about ourselves. And make Locked On Lakers your first listen of every day. We'll see everybody Wednesday.